The festival of the Holy Name is slowly growing. Nice. And there's more people here now than there were yesterday, and there's a continuity from yesterday, so it's a little... For those of you that weren't here with us yesterday, what can we do? Because what I want to speak about is in connection with something from yesterday. So I feel a little bit at a loss how to make the connection. So just the beginning part you'll have to pay attention to, those of you that weren't with us yesterday, because it's just going to be a few bullet points and then we're going to roll. From some of the messages yesterday, there were ideas expanded on turning attention to Krishna in the form of His holy name, the most accessible feature or manifestation of Krishna, specific for this age of Kali. And all scriptures indicate this. There's a problem. Problem is, we're attached. We're attached to darkness. We're attached to the modes of passion and ignorance, trying to be the enjoyer of prakriti. And we're very determined to be the enjoyer of prakriti. Even though we find it's painful, we're attached to our suffering. And the holy name is an opportunity to again turn our attention to Krishna in the most accessible form. Yesterday made mention of what Jiva Goswami writes in his Sandarbhas, Bhakti Sandarbha, which is to understand how we came into the material circumstance of life gives us a clue how to get out of the material circumstance of life. The doorway through which we came is the doorway through which we can exit. Very simple, very logical. So what's that entrance into material existence? And the entrance is, he uses the phrase, Bahir Mukha Jeev. Jeev, living entity. Bahir, away. Mukha, we turned our face or turned our attention away from Krishna. And when Prabhupada's simplifying that is, when you turn your back to the sun, what do you see? Answer, shadow. Shadow implies light, but it's the absence of light. Similarly, the material experience is the absence of the reality of Krishna. And what's the absence, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, what is that which appears to be real? And the word that's used is artha, meaning of value and substance. Substantial, without Krishna, what is that? Lord says to Lord Brahma, know that to be my illusory potency. Illusory potency is that which appears to be but is not. Maya, in short. We used to have this ISKCON vernacular saying, you're in Maya, Prabhu. And the alternative is to get out of Maya as you walk through the same door that you came through to get into Maya. And that's turn your face to Krishna. So that was the theme, one of the themes from yesterday. And turning attention to Krishna, we heard from Badahari's rendering of Brihat Bhagavatamrita that it's not only a behavior like Hare Krishna. That's a behavior. It's making a sound, but there's another component. Attention. Attentiveness. With an aspiration, a hope, a desire, and a wish, an expectation, upeksha, to be situated in your relationship with Krishna while through the medium of calling his holy name. So, the heading for the presentation I'm planning to make just now, foundational principles for chanting. So one of the foundational principles is bring your attentiveness to Krishna when chanting his holy name. Bring your attentiveness to the holy name when chanting the holy name. So from previous discussions during the festival of the holy name, I was sharing something that's kind of like a springboard for today. We have the experience where we're trying to bring the mind to the holy name, but as if possessed of its own will, the mind doesn't want to go. It's only the modes of nature acting, but the modes of nature are acting, and the mind doesn't want to go. So, I gave the example, there's one way to try to get the mind to go, and that's force the mind, and another way to get the mind to go is to have the mind attracted to the all-attractive. Now, I'm trying to remember the personality, and I can't remember the personality, but what's one of the writers that read Bhagavad Gita? Thoreau, I believe. Let's say, use Thoreau's name. In his later years, he was living in a mode of goodness situation, in a rural farm situation. Mode of goodness, peaceful situation. And one day, he was attempting to take a young heifer, a bull, like a young bull, back into the barn. All the other animals had gone into the barn. It was time to go back in the barn. They went back in the barn, but one animal wasn't. So he got behind the animal and put his shoulder to the backside of the animal and was pushing and slapping and hollering, and he was being stubborn. He wasn't going. So his son came along and saw him struggling like this. So he got on the other side and he put his shoulder, and together they were slapping and yelling and pushing, and the heifer was stronger. He wasn't going. And so one maid came and saw the two men struggling. She smiled. She went inside the barn, put her finger inside some salt, and came and placed the finger in front of the mouth of the heifer, and placed her finger into his mouth, and the tongue went out, and she just went like this, and he went right into the barn. Lesson. Sometimes the mind, as Arjuna says to Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, has its own, as if its own will, called conditioning. But Krishna is all attractive, and if we can learn, meditate upon the fact that Krishna is all attractive, it may help us to come to that position. Now what about these, so that's on the Krishna side. We'll go back to the discussion from this morning of the foyer and the temple room, or the material circumstance in which we find ourselves, and Goloka Vrindavan, the kingdom of God, being with Krishna, where we want to be. And there's a gap between where we are and where we want to be, what our state of consciousness is and what we know. There's a gap, and between where we are and where we want to go, there's a threshold or a limen, a dividing area, and there are keys that can help us cross that threshold, make little steps towards where we want to go, to be with Krishna. So part of it is to understand the all attractiveness of Krishna, the merciful nature of Krishna, the loving nature of Krishna, the qualities, appreciating the quality of the holy name. And the other side is to recognize the temporality of whatever it is that we're attached to. One of the Vaishnava poets that Prabhupada would refer to as Govinda Das, where he would say, everything in this material world is quite temporary. He compared, in a very beautiful song, to water on a lotus petal. Lotus petal is waxy. And with a little wind, this water that's beaded up very nicely on the lotus, it falls very tenuous. Whatever it is that we have in this world, a little movement of the material energy and it's gone. Or another metaphor is like the shadow or a reflection, because the material maya, the material energy, is compared to a shadow or a reflection of the object. So here's a mirror and here's an apple, and in the mirror you can see the apple. And if you're hungry, no nourishment from that reflection of the apple. What to speak of a little change of the angle of the mirror, and there goes the apple. There is no substance, and then there it goes. It's now you see it, now you don't. There's no substance. There's no substance in the reflection. And that's the nature of maya. We're attached to that which has no substance. And we want substance. We want the real deal. We want happiness. We want love. We want relationship. And we're not finding it. What to speak of a little twist and it's gone. Just a little something and the whole thing is gone. Where did it go? It never existed to begin with. And yet we continue chasing. So part of that, there's these two parts. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Taking shelter of Krishna means recognizing who is Krishna. Krishna tattva. The reality of Krishna. And the other is asat, the illusion, the temporality of chasing after a mirage. When you're thirsty, there's no water. By nature, there isn't. And we keep going. So put on the brakes over here and put the green on over here. Go over here. When you find yourself in the 32 round day tomorrow, or however many rounds you may chant, maybe more, maybe less, but especially when you're in an extended period of chanting, you'll find, quite possibly, quite likely, some periods where it's dry, or a valley, or mechanical, or struggle. So some of these things that I'm mentioning may be helpful. Think of the nature of Krishna. Think of the nature of where we want to be. We want to be in that realm of Goloka Vrindavan. So in the realm of Goloka Vrindavan, describe a little bit of that realm. There's so many leelas. One leela is when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. When it was time for Krishna to put the hill back down, he told the residents of Vrindavan, "You can go now. The rain has subsided, the flood is gone, everything is safe. Just go outside and I'll put the hill down." So they went. But the cows, they were so attached to Krishna, they didn't want to leave Krishna even long enough for him to put the hill down. So Krishna called them by name. 16,108 cows. And told them, because Krishna has the capacity to speak in all languages, did you know that? And he told them, "You can leave now." So they were leaving from underneath the hill, but they couldn't bear the separation, so they went back again. And Krishna said, "No, you have to go. I have to put the hill down." So they left and Krishna put the hill down. And then the elders of Vrindavan, they had an elder conference. They got together at Nanda Baitak. It's a place where Nanda Maharaj would hold discussions amongst the village people, the village elders. And they were asking Nanda Maharaj, "Who is this boy? Little boy holding up a whole hill for 7 days with one hand, a little finger of one hand, little finger of his left hand. Who is this boy?" "Maybe..." And he started speculating. And Nanda Maharaj said, "I don't know. All I know is what Garga Muni said. At the time of the name-giving ceremony for Krishna, he said, Narayana Samo Gunaha. Your son will be Sama, means like. He'll have qualities like Narayan." Garga Muni was very careful. He didn't say he's Narayan. Because Nanda Maharaj couldn't deal with that. "He'll have qualities like Narayan." And Garga Muni also said that this boy, he will offer protection to all the residents of Vrindavan. He didn't elaborate. He didn't say who he was. He just said like this: "Anena sarva durgani yuyam anjas tarishyata. Krishna will save you from all difficulties." That's all I know. That's what Garga Muni said. So, they went back to their homes pondering, who is Krishna? The next Dwadasi, following the lifting of Govardhan Hill, was another test. It's not only, like someone asked yesterday, when things happen, how do we know if it's our karma or if Krishna's purifying us or Krishna's testing us? It depends on your consciousness. The residents of Vrindavan, they receive tests, but it's just for the same purpose that Krishna enacts the Leela. It's to strengthen their affection, their attachment, their love, their exclusive shelter, intensify their love for him. So, on the Dwadasi, following the Ekadasi, after Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill, Nanda Maharaj was preparing to break the Ekadasi on Dwadasi day. For those who are following Ekadasi, it's important that you know when to break Ekadasi. For that reason, we announce it at our Sunday programs here and many temples. The breaking of Ekadasi is between this time and that time on the such and such day. So there are rules. Without getting too technical, there's Sunday. There's an overlap between one day and the next day, and that's the interval of time when it's not Ekadasi and it's not yet Dwadasi. So sometimes there's an overlap. So it gets really technical. Like, when do you break Ekadasi? Or when do you follow a particular? How do you judge by lunar calendar? So Nanda Maharaj was bathing in the river Jamuna, preparing to break the fast, which was part of the ritual of breaking the fast. And the agents of Varuna thought, oh, he's breaking the rule. So they kidnapped him. They dragged him underwater and took him to the abode of Varuna, expecting that Varuna would punish him for his breaking of a rule. They were little boys. It was very early in the morning. It was just as the sun was rising, or just before the sun was rising at particular time. So the boys saw, some of the other men, they saw Nanda Maharaj. They thought he had drowned. So what did they do? Krishna! Krishna! Because they're residents of Vrindavan. All they know is Krishna. Krishna! Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna was a distance away in one sense because he's all pervasive at the same time. And he says that he was sleeping on a bed of flowers. And you know anybody that sleeps on a bed of flowers? Krishna sleeps on a bed of flowers. At least that night, he was sleeping on a bed of flowers. And Upashruta, he was near and he heard. So you know from Vrindavan, where is the Nandagram and where is the river Jamuna? It's quite a distance. Because daily, Nanda Maharaj would bathe at Pavan Sarovar, just at the base of Nanda Maharaj's hill, Nandagram. But he went all the way through to Jamuna. So Krishna heard his name called, and he was there at once. Why? And how? Well, Krishna doesn't need any how. He's all powerful. But why is because of the feeling of mamata, affection, of love. Krishna, you are everything. They didn't have to say, Krishna, you are. They just said, Krishna. Krishna came. He was there immediately. And they explained what happened. He's a little boy. They're men. Krishna. So Krishna went and got Balaram, and they went to the abode of Varuna. And as soon as Krishna appeared, Varuna stood up, gave seat of honor to Krishna. How wonderful, you've come here. Let me worship you. And he offered puja right in front of Nanda Maharaj, who's going, what? He's Varuna and he's worshiping Krishna, my little boy. They had another conference when they went back. Who is this boy? But that's the quality of love. This is prema bhakti. When calling Krishna's name, Krishna's there. But it's not, when we're calling Krishna's name, Krishna's also there. Not just when we're calling Krishna's name, even sinful persons, when they call Krishna's name. Because it's Krishna's nature. He's loving. We may be out to lunch, but Krishna's loving. It's his nature. In the Ajamila story, there's a very wonderful description of the power of the holy name, which is what we're spending the time with this weekend, and the holy name. So the theology of the holy name is presented in connection with the Ajambila story. It's told by Shukadeva Goswami to show the power, the potency of the holy name. So very quickly, all of you know, or most all of you know, the history. Ajamila, like many people that are very pious, he was really good. There are pages describing how good he was. He was nicely trained, very respectable, very learned, very faithful to his father, very respectful to his teacher, married. Paka, very, very good. But inside there were some desires that hadn't manifest. In bad association, those desires flared. And that fire consumed him. And he became very fallen. His life became completely corrupted. His good qualities were gone. And all the bad qualities that you can think of became his qualities. And attached. He had completely forgotten his religious principle and God. And he was completely attached to sinful activity. Attached. Up to the point specifically Prabhupada describes, he was 86 years old. And he had a small son. I mean, just do the math. How old was he when the child was conceived and born? And he was really attached. But because of Krishna inspiring him within his heart, from his previous brahminical activity, Krishna inspired him, named him Narayan. So he named him Narayan. And his natural affection flowed to his youngest of many children, born of the prostitute that he was cohabiting with. And his affection was going to his son, Narayan. And so he called his son. The verse is describing, Narayan, come and eat. Narayan, let's go to the market. Narayan, did you do? Come sit on my lap. Narayan, 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 Narayan. And as will happen with every one of us, the time of death came. And because of his attachment to his small son, his thoughts went, that was his shelter. Just like we have so many shelters, our little attachments, and medium attachments, and big attachments, and our attachments, temporal attachments, we have them. That's what's keeping us from the house of bhakti. And so he called Narayan, my son. What's a little toddler going to do to help someone that's about to die? Answer, nothing. What is that shelter going to do for you? Nothing. But the mind goes to where the attachments are. Prabhupada has described this, and it's been recited by those who had near-death experiences. When the time of death comes, the mind scans the activities of one's life, and that which is most prominent form of attachment the mind goes to. And depending upon where the mind is fixed at the time of death, that's where the soul will go, to that. I had this experience once. I was coming back from book distribution at JFK, and we went until like 8:30 and then took the train back from JFK. It was like an ordeal. Take a bus, then a train, then change the train, and come back and take rest, and go to Mangal Arati, get up, go through the morning program, and go back up to JFK. So it was at night. It was between 8:30 and 9 o'clock, and I was changing from the F train to the A train to get to the temple. Or the other way around, the A train to the F train. And when you get off the A train, you have to go across the platform to get to the F train. So as I was getting off the A train, there was somebody stretched out on the platform, convulsing. And there was a crowd of people, you know how it is. Oh, there's something awful, let's go look. Crowd of people around the person. And, you know, the guy was, he was on his way out. So the people asked, hey man, what do you want? What's your last wish? Can I have a cigarette? Give the guy a cigarette. Yeah, give the guy a cigarette. So lit up a cigarette. He's what else you want, man? To say what you... I want Susie. That was it. Cigarette and Susie. Maybe his girlfriend could have been Radha or something. Or Lakshmi or something. Susie. So he thought of his son. So the Yamadutas came because he was sinful, and they took their subtle ropes to take a subtle body, to take the subtle body and the soul before Yamaraj. But because he had called Narayan, the Vishnudutas came. And they were sent by Lord Vishnu. And the Vishnuduta said, stop. And the Yamaduta said, stop. Who stops death? Who are you guys? Never mind. You say you're the agents of Yamaraj. What's the principles of Dharma that you're ministering? Well, you know, he's been so sinful. Yes, but he's chanted the holy name. Yeah, but he didn't atone for his sins. The chanting of the holy name is the best form of atonement. Now I'm going to read one verse and short purport. Canto 6, chapter 2, texts 9 and 10. Sarvesham api agavavatam. Agha means sin. Agavatam. Idam eva sunishkritam. Sunishkritam is the best form of atonement. Nama Vyaharanam Vishnur Yatas Tad Vishayamati. You're going to hear that phrase. I'm going to repeat it a number more times, so hear it carefully. Yatas Tad Vishayamati. So, Nama, the name. Vyaharanam, chanting of the name of Vishnu. Yatas, because of that. Is yata tata, because of this. Tad vishaya mati. Tad vishaya. There's these Sanskrit terms, vishaya and ashraya. The subject and the object. Like, you know, in grammar, subject and predicate. Subject and in relationship, there's the abode of affection and the object of affection. Like a child in a crib and a group of people looking at the child in the crib. Oh, he's cute. Look at him smile. Listen to him cry. Oh, he's cute. So there's the object and then there's the subject and then the object of affection. So Vishaya, Tad Vishaya, that person who calls the object Vishnu, the abode of the object of love, Matihi, that results in Vishnu's attention. Here's the translation. The chanting of the holy name of Vishnu is the best process of atonement for a thief of gold or other valuables, and then gives a long list of sins. Simply by chanting the holy name of Vishnu, such sinful persons attract the attention of the Supreme Lord, who therefore considers, because this man has chanted my holy name, my duty is to give him protection. So we're down here, and the Jamila is, hopefully comparatively, lower. But what does Lord Vishnu consider? He's called my name. He wasn't even intending to call his name, but he's called my name. So I must come and give him protection. So he sent the Vishnu Dutas, that's fine, same as his coming. But that's the nature of Lord Vishnu. That's the nature of the personality of Godhead. We just call his name. So when you're hitting a dry spot or a valley or something during your 32-round day, think, apply. What is the nature of the person whose name I'm calling? He's very affectionate. In the word-for-word translation, nama vyaharanam, chanting of the holy name, Vishnoho, of Vishnu, yataha, because of which, tat vishaya, the person who chants the holy name, matihi, gets Krishna's matihi, Krishna pays attention to him. Really? We're inconsequential little specks. We're like, you know, tiny. Krishna's going to pay attention to us? We're inconsequential. But when someone calls Krishna's name, Krishna gives his personal attention. That's his nature. Not only he gives his attention, he gives his protection. And what does protection mean? Protection from that tendency to have this illusory attraction to be the enjoyer of illusion and suffer unnecessarily, completely. It's all unnecessary. It's all illusory and unnecessary, both. Krishna will give his protection if we simply accept it, just by calling his name. Here's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, on this verse that I just read you, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has a 10-page commentary. Ooh. So I'm just going to read a little bit, two paragraphs, where he writes, the name of the Lord may destroy sins. It does. But how can Namabhas be the atonement for thousands of grave sins which cannot be destroyed by thousands of 12-year vows? So someone has done some sins. There's karmakanda prayaschitta. 12 years of vows to overcome sins. And some sins are so grave they can't be. What to speak of the volume? 12 years of sins are insufficient and Namabhas is sufficient? The doubter may say, Purvapaksha. Then he gives a list. Stena means a gold thief. Yes, chanting is the best atonement. Sunishkritam, since it destroys the root of the sin. What's the root of sin? turning attention away from Krishna. The holy name, by its very nature, brings our attention back to Krishna. At least the potency is there. Because the name of Krishna, Abhinatam Nama Namino, the name is Krishna. So even the root of the sin is, the potency is there. It's the best
form of atonement.
A 12-year vow of atonement, though it destroys the effects of sin, cannot destroy the root of sin. That is not the only result, because from chanting the name of the Lord's mind dwells on that person who chants. Tad Vishaya Mati. The Lord thinks, this person belongs to me. I will always protect him. This is Sridhar Swami's meaning of the phrase. Really? Krishna. And Krishna's going to pay attention to me? His mind will be upon me? That's what the verse is saying. Not only his mind will be upon me, he'll give me protection. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur goes on. Hearing his name being chanted and remembering Ajamila, the Lord ordered us, Vishnudutas saying, the Lord ordered us to bring Ajamila, who was chanting his name. How much more the Lord will remember a person who chants the Lord's name with a service attitude. That is the implication. So we're down here, or we're out, we want to be with Krishna. Desire is not so strong, but there's something there that says, I want to be with Krishna. What's the nature of Krishna? He'll think of us. His thoughts will be upon us. Wow. Another example, Putana. You know that nice verse where Uddhava, I'll spin out a little bit. Uddhava, I'm an Uddhava fan. Uddhava is met by Vidura, who finds him in the middle of a forest in Vrindavan. Oh, Uddhava. Nice to see you here in the forest. What good fortune. You're the best of the residents of Dwarka. Please tell me how everyone in Dwarka is doing. How are Krishna and Balaram? And he lists everybody. Uddhava can't... He finishes all his questions and Uddhava is choked with such emotion thinking of Krishna. He can't speak. He exhibits bhava. His hairs are standing in and tears are streaming from his eyes. His voice is choked. Just thinking of Krishna. But he's thinking of Krishna in such separation. But it's not just separation. His thoughts of Krishna are on his divinity. And despite his divinity, he acts like an ordinary person. And he finds that painful because ordinary people think of him as ordinary. For Uddhava, that's painful. Just like when this evening we'll sing Kevalastakam. And one was thinking that this most precious thing is kacha. Just a useless piece of glass instead of ratna. Beautiful jewel, most valuable jewel. How unfortunate. How unfortunate for one who has that realization. How unfortunate. Let me just read a few verses from Uddhava. When I think of Lord Krishna, how he was born in the prison house of Vasudeva, although he is unborn, how he went away from his father's protection to Braja and lived there incognito out of fear of his enemy, he was feared by feared personified. And how, although unlimitedly powerful, he fled from Mathura in fear. All these bewildering incidents give me distress. Lord Krishna begged pardon from his parents. Vasudeva and Devaki, when he went back to Mathura after KOing Kamsa, then he came before his parents, and he begged pardon for his inability to serve their feet, due to being away from home because of his great fear of Kamsa. He said, "Oh mother, oh father, please excuse us for this inability. All this behavior of the Lord gives me pain." Who, after smelling the dust of his lotus feet even once, could ever forget it? Simply by expanding the leaves of his eyebrows, Krishna has given the death blow to those who are burdening the earth. You have personally seen how the king of Chedi, Shishupal, achieved success in yoga practice, although he hated Lord Krishna. Even the actual yogis aspire after such success with great interest by performance of their various practices. Who can tolerate separation from him? Lord Sri Krishna is the Lord of all kinds of threes and is independent supremely. By achievement of all kinds of fortune, he is worshipped by the eternal maintainers of creation, who offer him paraphernalia of worship by touching their millions of helmets to his feet. Therefore, O Vidura, does it not give us pain, his servitors, when we remember that he, Lord Krishna, used to stand before King Ugrasena, who was sitting on the royal throne, and used to submit explanations before him, saying, "Oh my Lord, please let it be known to you." Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of mother to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful, and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast? Who could be a better master than Krishna? Why? She wanted to kill him. But there was something, little something. When she approached Krishna, she saw, oh, such a beautiful child. A little appreciation and serving in the role of mother, although it was to kill him. He accepted that little fraction of a desire to serve Krishna as mother and gave her a position as an eternal servant of Mother Yasoda in the spiritual world. Who can be a master like Krishna? He's so affectionate. Krishna's nature is that he likes to be controlled by his devotee. Krishna likes that. And when even an Ajamila or even a Putana have a little indirect, what's the nature of Krishna, this person whose name we're calling? And he comes. And we're inattentive? No. That's something that can be an antidote. I'm presenting this as little inspiration to don't be attentive. To check that tendency, because that dry spell or that valley is our inattentiveness. In the childhood pastimes of Krishna, similarly, he showed this quality of his when he saw in the marketplace, he left the house, saw in the marketplace a fruit vendor, lady. Oh, little Krishna, in his little fingers, took some rice to barter with the lady. But because little fingers, the rice fell through his fingers as he walked smiling. It all fell out. So whatever he had to the little palm, that's what he offered. So she gave her whole fruit basket. And she looked inside her basket, and there was jewels instead of fruits. Just a little service. Krishna likes the affection of his devotees. In that same section, it's described, they would clap their hands and tell Krishna, "You dance, and we'll give you half a sweetmeat." So Krishna would dance. Mother Jasoda would say, "Krishna, go get your father's shoes." He was just learning to walk. He put the shoes on his head and toddled over and bring Nanda Maharaj's shoes. You've seen the picture. Very beautiful. Krishna likes. So when called with some genuine feeling, or a desire to have a feeling that I wish I had such a feeling that I'm so far from that position, Krishna, please soften my heart. Please crush this hard heart and awaken the real nectar of the holy name from within my heart as I call your name. Krishna, that same feeling of helplessness other than Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada explains, well, here's the verse. To pure devotees throughout the world who could understand his activities, Krishna's childhood activities, the Supreme Personality of Krishna exhibited how much he can be subdued by his devotees, his servants. In this way, he increased the pleasure of the Brijbasis by his childhood activities. Prabhupada writes, that Krishna performed childhood activities to increase the pleasure of his devotees, which was another transcendental humor. He exhibited these activities not only to the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, but also to others who were captivated by his external potency and his opulence. Both the internal devotees, who were simply absorbed in love for Krishna, and the external devotees, who were captivated by his unlimited potency, were informed of Krishna's desire to be submissive to his devotees. This is the nature of Krishna. He's declaring through his pastimes and through his words and through his loving devotees. This is Krishna's nature. So we're down here, and what we understand is up here. But understand Krishna's loving nature, how he factually reciprocates. One more reference. From Chaitanya Charitamrita, where this nature of Krishna is being described. Aishwarya Madhurya Karunye Swarupa Purnata Bhakta Vatsala Atma Paryanta Vadanyata. Krishna's transcendental qualities, such as opulence, sweetness, and mercy, are perfect and full. As far as Krishna's affectionate leaning towards his devotees is concerned, he is so magnanimous that he can give himself to his devotees. So if we can learn or cultivate the type of chanting where, like the maid that was attracting the heifer to go into the barn, Krishna is all attractive. Our consciousness may be as dull as it is. Krishna is all attractive. Krishna is loving. Krishna is affectionate. Krishna means to attract. He attracts us to him. And we're covered, we're not so attracted. But we have some faith, so we're chanting. Meditate on the loving nature of Krishna. That when we call Krishna's name, even we're covered, his nature is tad vishaya mati. That because we're calling, Krishna thinks of us. And Krishna comes. And Krishna protects. Krishna uplifts. Just continue with that faith. Tad vishaya mati. I find it very helpful. We're sadhakas. We're trying to practice nicely. We're distracted and struggling and far from the goal. But Krishna is the goal, and Krishna is all merciful. And we're in this, the abode of, or trying to become the carrier of bhakti in our hearts. That little, even the ajamila or putana, so the little Krishna reciprocates with. So Krishna is reciprocating. That's the nature of relationship. It's not a one-sided thing. It's not dependent upon our prowess. What prowess? What strength? On our own. But the strength of the personality of Godhead and his attracting us. One of the things that, just end with this, one of the things that helped one of the devotees in our previous festival of the Holy Name was the idea of, instead of seeing chanting as something that you do, seeing chanting as something that you receive. You're receiving the Holy Name, receiving the mercy of Krishna through his Holy Name, and welcoming through opening your heart to that mercy of Krishna, the relationship between yourself and Krishna, because its relationship is two sides. And Krishna is the master, and we're a feeble servant, but trying. And Krishna sees that trying, Krishna's reciprocation will be there. Stay in that space. Move to accepting that mercy that Krishna wants to give. The gift that Srila Prabhupada came to the Western countries to give to the residents of the Western countries under the order of his spiritual master, the gift of Lord Chaitanya. The gift of Lord Chaitanya is the Holy Name. Please take it. Meditate on that gift. It's very inspiring. Receive it. Receive it as fully as you can, and keep striving to receive it as full as you can, knowing the merciful nature of Krishna. It's a very attractive process. Hare Krishna. Any comments or discussion? Not a sheesh.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. We are hearing that while we call the name of Krishna, Krishna is present with us. While chanting and trying to meditate, that while I am chanting the holy name of Krishna, Krishna is present with me, I find myself going into a particular pattern, and I would try to explain it this way. When I am with a person in my worldly experience, when I am with a person, I'm doing something, talking something or something. But when Krishna is with me while I'm chanting the holy name, what am I doing with him, or what is Krishna doing with me?
Well, Anantashesh?
Yes, Maharaj.
when I'm calling your name, this is it's a demonstration. Calling your name, there's something that's happening. Immediately, yes? Or I could, call somebody else's, Badahari Prabhu. Immediately there's some connection. There's, yes? Just by hearing the name. So when we're calling Krishna's name, Where does the tendency that we have come from? It rests in Krishna. So we're the message, it's an appeal for restoring our relationship once again, and that the second is the essence of that relationship is service. Please engage us in your service. The initial service is chanting or praying to be engaged in service. So that my whole life, eternally, will be situated in that way. And what Krishna wants of me, what he wants to do with me, he'll indicate, or the time for those varieties of service will come later. Right now, it's opening my heart to him in that way. And as the mature stages of chanting come, other forms of reciprocation, of interaction, nama, rupa, guna, lila, etc., entering into Krishna's pastimes. Now I don't have that qualification. I need to do this one. That's what I'm doing. And it's helping to qualify me to do the various services that I do in Krishna consciousness, in with thoughtfulness, mindfulness, presence with Krishna, in all the things that I do. But for that period of, while I'm calling Krishna's name, it's associating with Krishna in that way. Striving to awaken the fullness of devotion with Krishna. It's a nice question. Something else? Yes? Whoa. Right over here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. One question comes to my mind while chanting or calling out to Krishna is that Krishna has a form. We all know Krishna has a form. Who am I? What is my form? I am not this body. And we said I am a soul, which is just a minuscule kind of. So who am I? What is my form when I am calling to Krishna?
In time that will be clear. First, you know, get the ABCs down very clearly. That, in other words, my position is the servant. In Sri Brahma Samhita is described this way. There were two mantras that Lord Brahma received. The first of them gave him the realization that I am Krishna's eternal servant. The second, the realization came, my form, the rasa of my service is the eternal maid servant. Or in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that Lord Brahma, his position was friendship. In more mature stages, the detail of form, our form, will become revealed. But first, before that form could make any sense to us at all, what's my position as eternally? Like the song that was sung this morning, of in all circumstances, that's my position. And life will test us. Oh, really? What about a little enjoyment? What about a little difficulty? Are we fixed in that conception? So there will be further purification required before the particular spiritual form, swarup, will become revealed. Yeah? In time. Something else? Yes? Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for a very wonderful class. My question was, most of the time we hear that while chanting, We should not think of anything, we should just hear it. And you just said that as we progress in chanting, then Krishna's pastimes will be revealed. So
everything will be revealed.
So does it mean then we are thinking of Krishna's pastimes?
No. It doesn't, that should start thinking of Krishna's pastimes will be revealed. This was discussed yesterday, but I'll go through it again. When chanting Krishna's name with attention, something will happen from Krishna's side. Besides this, we'll feel his protection and his presence. His qualities, I've just identified one of them, his bhaktavatsala quality, perhaps the most beautiful of his qualities is he's very affectionate to his devotee. So the qualities of Krishna will be revealed and felt. But while that's going on, where does our attention go? To the holy name. Then the form of Krishna and his qualities will be revealed. From Krishna's side, I am like this. And when that form of Krishna appears in the mind, by Krishna's appearing at his own volition, where does the attention go? To the holy name. And the pastimes of Krishna may be enacted in one's heart by Krishna's will to do so. And where does one's attention go? To the holy name. Because the holy name is everything. So when attention goes to the holy name, everything in by Krishna's volition becomes revealed as Krishna so desires, because he's fully independent. And that's one of the beautiful realizations of chanting. I find Krishna's fully independent. It's not just what we do or who we are or something. Just get, you know, get everything aligned properly, like it's something material or mechanical or a vending machine. You know, put the goods in and put the coins in the slots and pull the lever and down shoot comes, you know, the product. The holy name is not a vending machine. Krishna's independent. It's nice. It's nice. But his qualities are supremely nice too. So it's just, it's a relationship. And when there's a relationship, he's the master. Like Prahlad Maharaj said to Lord Nrisingadev, you want me to take a benediction? No. Here's our relationship. You're the master, and I'm the servant, and there's nothing else in our relationship. That's our relationship. You can do with me what you want. I'm the servant. You're a loving master. I completely trust you. Whatever you want. That's what my life is. Just serving you. That's who I am. Just your servant. Nothing else. So. Okay. Last question over here. We'll end.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, in yesterday's evening class we heard that Haridas Thakur, while talking to the prisoners, he was saying that restriction from sense gratification and faith on the Supreme Personality of Godhead are two things which give us real freedom. So my question is, how much weight do I give to the restriction on sense gratification part? Because then at some level there's a fear that there might be unmanifested desires which might result as in the case of, which might show up as in the case of Ajamila's life later at some stage.
Okay. There's an easy answer to that. I'll give it a two-part. An incremental answer, that is, according to your capacity to sustain, that's what you do and don't do. And even, and the other part is that what you do, let it be with theistic regulation. Like Prabhupada would say, we don't say don't sleep. We don't say don't eat. We don't say don't have families. But do these things under the codes of the Vedas. And how much you eat and how much you sleep and etc., the things that are in, that may be in the category of sense gratification, let them be properly regulated. So the quality of goodness with at the center the principle that it, even this is simply for cultivating for Krishna's pleasure. And that which I can sustain is what I'll do. That which is sustainable, that's what I'll do. Because in the center is this sadhana. And as the sadhana grows, what's sustainable in terms of what I don't require in terms of sense gratification, it will diminish in the course of time, naturally.
And just maybe a
follow-up with that, okay.
I guess I also am asking, one is definitely for my personal benefit, and also as a mother, in terms of training my child, how much weight do I give there?
Same principle. You know your child. He's very unique. And what is appropriate for your child may not be the same for another child than another child. But the principle, there are certain things you're not going to, because it's not theistic, not have him do. There's a line. And then he's a person. And according to who's his nature, you engage him and regulate. That's what you do, I'm sure. I watch you. He wants to run around, and you let him run around, and at a certain point you hold his hand and say, you can't run around. But he likes to run around. But then, in course of time, he learns the social behavior that's appropriate. Gradually, a little, gradually learning. And there, he likes to play his drum, and sometimes it's disruptive, but slowly he's learning how to be socially, a little bit better. And there are devotees that are very accepting of him and, give him his place, and he sits and for a little while and plays the drum, then gets restless and goes off and does something else. So he has his nature. Each individual has their nature, and there's a relationship. We're looking at that nature and guiding and nurturing the devotional component so that the sense gratification part becomes more manageable and reduced and displaced eventually. Not by force, just by natural cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Okay, thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.